of Chabon.
Welcome to the 2-4 on the MontrealBias.com. I'm Zach Vanoss, joined by a under-the-weather Sean O'Neill this week, aren't I?
Yeah, feeling a little under the weather, but, you know, I'm a trooper, giving the people what they want, which is our voices in their ears.
You got a cold?
Yeah, I got a little cold going on.
It's that time of the year, that time of weather.
Yeah, exactly.
What's it doing back in La Belle Province? Because here in the center of the universe... It's just crap. It's just rain and rain and more rain, and that's it.
It's kind of what it's like here, too, actually. We got dumped on about a week ago, but that's more or less all melted. And, yeah, it's just kind of gray and drizzly and half rainy, half snowy, hovering around zero but not quite freezing yet. It's pretty gross out.
Yeah, it's not fun.
No, not really.
So what you wearing?
Well... I know this is an explicit podcast, but I don't think it's that explicit.
We're not there yet, eh?
We're not there yet. One day.
Okay,
one day.
Good. All right, let's get into this thing. It's been the last 48 hours in the Habs world have been a bit crazy, and the NHL right across the board.
Yeah, it's been eventful. We were, normally we record the podcast on Monday night. It didn't quite work out, so we're recording this on a Tuesday, but... Good thing that we waited, because a lot of stuff has happened. We have not that we wouldn't have had a lot to talk about otherwise, but a lot of stuff to go through on this episode.
So you're suggesting we jump right into it?
Might as well.
You want to make this thing happen? All right, I can do that. I'm up for that. All right, question number one. Since you're under the weather, I'll let you fire it off.
All right. Going back to Saturday's game against Pittsburgh, did the refs blow the call on that game-winning goal?
Yeah, that's a given.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're both on the same page on that one. I'm not, I don't tend to blame the refs for losses too often, but when they get it wrong, they get it wrong, and I don't think I'm being biased in saying that they just absolutely blew that one. Price had it under his glove for at least two Mississippis.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was a long time that he seemed to be in control of that thing, and he was pissed off after the game. I haven't seen him that mad, I don't think, in his career yet. He was fuming.
Yeah, he was furious, and it was just a blown call. It was a weird game all around.
Yeah, the reffing was strange up and down. I'd say it was the reffing was bad up and down.
The reffing was bad, and Montreal got most of the calls their way prior to that.
Yeah, I will agree with that.
So we have to, I don't know if you take that into account or not, we did get a couple of calls go our way, but the last one certainly didn't. I couldn't believe that they called that a goal.
No, but I mean, it's in the end, I mean, you get a point from the best team in the league finally working with all its cylinders, and you should be happy, but the way that game went, they're up 3-1, and to lose that way, just not even to Pittsburgh do you want to lose that way, even though, it's a team that you could kind of probably explain it as, one point from Pittsburgh, that's a good night, but Saturday night was just not a good night in Montreal.
No, it wasn't, and like I said, don't tend to blame the refs, but they do get it wrong sometimes, and they got it wrong that time.
Oh, there's no doubt. No doubt they got it wrong. And I mean, even we're not going to have our 5 minutes for fighting guest this week, but we'll be talking with Steph Dartwish more on that a little bit later. But we're supposed to be talking with a Pittsburgh blogger this week, and even he said, in his blog about that game, when you take off the homer glasses, this is from a Pittsburgh standpoint, when you take off the homer glasses, you got to admit that probably was the wrong call. So sometimes they get it wrong, and when it hurts your own team, it sucks. All right, taking a look at number two as soon as my ancient computer unfreezes and lets me look at it. How about you fire it off, because I've got a problem here.
Fair enough. While we're waiting for your computer, number two, what did you think of Price's reaction after the goal?
I liked it.
I did too.
I especially liked when he dropped the F-bomb. Did you hear that yet?
I didn't hear that part.
Oh, no, that's
the stick smash.
No, no, this was post-game interview. Yeah, there was the stick smash, the skate off immediately. He looked like he was headed to the locker room disgusted, but then he came back to watch the replay, threw up his arms in anger, and then post-game, he was talking to the guys, and the media scrum asked, so what happened out there? And he said, I had the fucking puck covered, or something along those lines. And I was like, all right, CP.
Fair enough. I missed that, but I did obviously see the, you know, the stick smash and the storming off the ice. And I liked it, too. You know, if there's one criticism people have had of Price, it's that he's a little too calm or nonchalant or whatever.
That's
and I don't really hold
anymore.
That against him. You know, guys just have different demeanors, and some guys get fired up, and some guys are more even-handed. So I never really held it against him that he was a calm guy. I think that's, generally speaking, a trait that you like to have in your goalie. But it was nice to see him get fired up just because it was such a bad call. He got robbed.
Yeah.
You know, he was looking for a win against probably the most explosive offense in the league, and he had the puck covered, and he just got robbed, and he had every right to be angry, and it was nice to see that out of him once in a while.
And he played a fantastic game up to that point.
Yeah, he had, and it's really too bad for him to lose a win that way.
But like you say, I mean, there's nothing wrong with a little emotion from the guy. As long as it, I don't think him and Marc-Andre Fleury do not like each other, I don't think. I think at least they have a good rivalry between the two of them. Going back to Carey's pose and then Fleury coming back with the pose, and he just really wanted to win that game, I think.
Yeah, and should have had it.
All right, number three is three games too many for Patches.
I think so. You know, sticking obviously with the Pittsburgh game, I thought I wouldn't have suspended him at all. I thought it was a borderline play, but given the other rulings we've had this season, I didn't think that was a suspendable hit. Had he gotten a game or two, fine, I can see that. Three games, that's a, you know, somewhat significant chunk of time, and I really didn't think that was warranted. And, you know, we've gone over this before. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I don't think the NHL has it out for the Habs, but it's the lack of consistency that's really maddening for everyone. And, you know, one or two games, fine, but three games really seems like a lot for what I thought was a borderline hit at worst.
I was okay. I'm okay with the three games, provided that going forward, because I said, you know, even in our forum, I said one or two. Kind of what I expect. I'm fine with that. They're trying to get hits out of the game like that. Okay, fine. Let's do that. We'll do three. I said two's fine. One more. Okay, it's a bit heavier than what I predicted, but I'm fine with it. Provided that going forward, there's a strong amount of consistency. As long as when the next hit comes down, we can look at the situation, compare it to what happened between Pacioretty and Letang, and say, okay, was this more intentional? Did the guy aim for the face? Did the elbow come up? What's the, you know, as Shanny likes to break it down, if he's going to break it down like that, then we need to see some consistency from him. And I think we need to see, you know, anything more so needs to be more games, and especially not less, because then at that point you get the sense that he's just spinning the roulette wheel on each of these things. He may break it down with detailed explanation, but the next one that is in the ballpark has to get the same amount of games. Now, and if it doesn't, I'm with you. There's no conspiracy theory. It would be stupid for a professional sports league to have some great conspiracy theory against its most successful franchise ever. That's stupid. But it's just the fact that, you know, it'll mean that things are very, very inconsistent. And as much as I've enjoyed what Shanahan's done in terms of the suspensions, if he can't get some consistency soon, then yeah, he's going to be a different problem than we had earlier, but once again, a problem in the discipline. Number four, what you got?
Number four, do you consider the Caps a more dangerous playoff team now that Bruce Boudreau has been shown the door?
I don't know that I attribute their lack of playoff success thus far to Bruce Boudreau, so until I, you know, this is a team that you're not going to be able to correctly measure until the postseason, and until these players show me, namely Alex Ovechkin, that he's a crunch time guy, I don't consider them any more dangerous than I've considered them in the past.
Neither do I. I mean, I was never terribly convinced that Bruce Boudreau was a great coach. But that being said, you know, teams take their cue from their best player. We see that in Pittsburgh, we see that in Chicago, and we see that in Washington right now. And Ovechkin just looks like he doesn't care.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe that was partially due to the coach. Maybe Boudreau wasn't reaching him anymore. Maybe Hunter will. But I don't know if you can light a fire under him anymore. He's just another, you know, one of those guys who's flashy and puts up great stats, but I wouldn't really want to count on him in the clutch. So I'm not really any more scared of Washington than I was 48 hours ago, to be honest.
No, and I mean, even I texted you, you're off the Ovechkin train. You don't believe he's going to bounce back at all.
I think he might have a mini bounce back, but I think his days as, you know, being the best, second best, third best player in the league are over.
I haven't held out complete hope for that. I'll sustain a little hope that we can see Ovechkin back to his old self. Speaking of coaching changes in the NHL, one of our very own, Kirk Muller, now the head guy in Carolina. Is he going to succeed there?
It's possible. There are some pieces there. I know they're in last place, but it's not like the cupboard's bare.
It also depends on what you know, what is your measure of success.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was only a matter of time before he got a head coaching gig. I think he's going to be a good head coach in this league. You know, is it enough for Carolina to turn their season around and make the playoffs? Probably not. But assuming they give him more than just 2/3 of a year to turn things around, well, assuming he's there for the somewhat long term.
You're not hiring him to put in, to say, make it into the playoffs out of last place with this team right now.
I don't think so. I can't imagine they would.
No, that's where you put an interim guy to see what he can do with that situation.
Exactly. So will he be a success in the sense that he'll lead into the playoffs? I doubt it. But give him 2 or 3 years, I think he's got a future in this league.
Here's what Carey Price said, because I asked Price about Kirk Muller as a coach, and he said he's a proven leader and he's a motivator with strong communication skills, and that's why Carey thought he's going to have success. Does it not feel a little bit like the Habs might be missing a proven leader and a motivator with strong communication skills?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone knows he would have been great for the job. He just...
Well, I mean, he wasn't going to stick around as the assistant. I'm just saying,
no.
If there's a problem with the Habs, and I'm not saying that, I'm saying, you know, if there is a problem with the Habs, you've got to believe it's just the coaching staff maybe doesn't have that great communicator, that passionate guy who kind of wears his heart on his sleeve all the time in that locker room right now.
Yeah, I agree. Number 6, Louis LeBlanc will be making his debut in the Red, White, and Blue tomorrow night against Anaheim. He's here for at least 3 games on the West Coast swing while Pacioretty's out. What do you expect from him during that 3-game stint?
Well, I don't know what to say I expect from him. I mean, you never know. Some guys come and they have immediate success and follow it up with absolutely nothing for long stretches. Some guys come up and, you know, you get the slow burn from them. But this is a 3-game trial. This is going to be nothing more. LeBlanc is not going to stay on the team no matter what he does in these next 3 games. Because, like you said, he's in the lineup while Patches is out of the lineup. What I do hope is that Jacques Martin puts him on the top 2 lines. Because you don't bring up a guy with this kind of finesse, this kind of talent, to make him a third and fourth liner. He's not going to succeed. It's not what he does. So, you know, I don't have a huge problem with you putting him in Patches' spot, see what happens, at least a few times, enough to get us a feel of, you know, where this kid's at in terms of his speed and his skill level to be at the NHL level at this point. So I don't know what to expect. I just know I don't want to see him buried on a fourth line playing a role that he has we're not ever going to want that from him. And the same thing with Pacioretty last season, early in the season. I remember I was annoyed that he came up and said he'd rather be back in the AHL if he wasn't going to play on the top 6 position. And I thought that was, you know, a bit of a dick thing to say, but he was right. He was completely right. These guys, they don't belong on the third and fourth line. If we're going to bring them up, put them on the top 6.
Yeah, it's a good point. There's a feeling that, you know, young guys have to come up and play on the bottom 2 lines and earn their way onto the top 2 spots. But LeBlanc's not that type of player. He's not a grinder. He's not a big guy. You're bringing him up because he's, you know, he's got good playmaking skills. He's a pretty decent sniper. Put him on one of those top 2 lines and see if he can connect with someone and score a couple points while he's up in the bigs. In terms of what I expect from him... You know, I'm trying to temper my expectations.
People don't understand that you love your French Quebec boys.
I do.
You texted me yesterday and asked if it was too early to get a LeBlanc jersey, in which case it was because he hadn't even chosen his number yet. But
well, even that's irrelevant.
You don't care?
No.
He's wearing number 71, by the way.
Interesting.
He's going to bring the good name to number 71 so we can get the taste of Ribeiro out of our mouth.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's what she said.
71, so now I know which sweater to buy.
Yeah, now you know.
Now I know.
You were one of the first people I knew who had a La Tendresse sweater, so.
Don't regret it for a second.
Nor should you. All right. What would you be willing to give up to bring Bobby Ryan to Montreal? Apparently the Ducks are shopping this kid. What would you send back?
I'd give up quite a bit, but the problem is, you know, everyone talks about Montreal making a trade. We don't have that many trade pieces.
No, we don't.
And, you know, I don't think there's any conceivable package where we'd be able to get a guy like Bobby Ryan. Cause
what about a first-round pick?
I think you need more than that.
Two first-round picks.
If you're willing to give away picks, that's one thing, because you can always do that. But in terms of prospects who are either considered can't-miss guys who are ready to contribute immediately, there's not very many.
No.
Unless maybe you're willing to part with Eller, I guess, or Pacioretty if it's a blockbuster.
Would you give up Pacioretty?
For Ryan?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Ooh.
I don't know.
I don't know either. I mean, that's a tough one.
That is a tough one. I mean, Bobby Ryan's, you know, an elite-level talent, and I don't know if Pacioretty's ever going to be that good, but I don't know if you give up your young up-and-coming guy for Bobby Ryan. I probably wouldn't pull the trigger on that one.
That feels like the line, though. That feels like kind of the place that they're going to expect in return, right?
Yeah, something along those lines. Unless you're willing to get rid of a guy like that, there's not a whole lot else Montreal can do.
No. Brian Burke, he drafted the kid. Is he going to go after him?
That's the thing. That's the type of thing you would do.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're having a pretty decent season. If they feel like they're one guy away, that's a good call, actually.
They are. They're playing well. Last week we thought they'd fallen back into being the Toronto Maple Leafs, but they look good again. They're scoring insanely.
Yeah, it's starting to click, and it was only a matter of time before something started to happen. I still think, you know, they're a 7 or 8 seed, but yeah. it is slowly starting to come together in Toronto.
Well, it had to at some point.
Yeah. My up, yes.
You're up.
Markov expected to be back Wednesday night against Anaheim. Campoli and Spacek are at least skating, is my understanding.
Yeah.
Now that that's happened, is Montreal out of excuses if they don't start to sort of turn things around a little bit?
Yeah, once Markov's back, which it seems to be Wednesday night against Anaheim. If not, then it's going to come in against San Jose. So we're looking at within the next 2 games, Markov's back. My God. If it doesn't work, I mean, it doesn't have to work right off because the guy hasn't played in 7 seasons. But if it doesn't work, you know, within a reasonable amount of time, then yeah, Montreal's out of excuses.
Yeah, I think so too, because all season long, what have we been saying? You know, wait till Markov gets back. You know, the power play will start clicking. PK will start playing better.
Emelin's going to rely on his game.
Yeah, Emelin will play better. We won't have to rely on these young guys so much. So, you know, maybe that's a lot of pressure, but that's what you're paying him for.
Yep.
And we've been saying it all season, you know, once the defense gets healthy, we're expecting this team to play up to their potential. And if that doesn't happen, then A, this team's not making the playoffs, and B, they're going to have to start looking in the mirror and maybe shake things up.
Oh, yeah. No, if all these guys, because it's a very different defensive team with Markov, Campoli, Spacek. I mean, it seems to be that at least by January 1st, these three are going to be back in the lineup as, say, Markov. Within the next 2 days, Spacek, I think we're looking at a week or so, and Campoli, probably by the end of December at this point. Once you get those guys back, it's a very different blue line for Montreal. So it should help, and if it doesn't, then I say you start getting rid of guys and you figure out how to finish dead last and get the first overall pick. I'm fine with, you know, if by January and these guys are back and they're essentially still playing the same style hockey, lose one, win one, lose a couple, win here and there, then I'd rather just finish last place.
Fair enough.
All right. What's wrong with Michael Camilleri?
You know, I'll go back to my go-to answer, which is that he's a streaky player. Mm-hmm. I don't have much beyond that. I still expect him to have a couple hot streaks before the season's over, but you know, this has been his worst stretch, I think it's fair to say, since he's become a Hab.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And yes, he's a streaky player, but he's not quite showing the same fire he used to.
Nope.
And, you know, I don't know. You know, sometimes players go cold, and then we sort of start to notice things like that, that maybe they're there, maybe they aren't, maybe we're putting too much there. But it just, you know, you see him in the defensive end. He's not really putting that much hustle in. And, you know, I still think he cares. I still think he's trying. I think he's frustrated. But it's not quite happening. And he looks down. He looks like he's in a bit of a slump. And I think he'll bust out of it, but he's really hasn't been that noticeable at all.
Do you think he's just sick of playing Jacques Martin's system?
It's possible.
I mean he's an exciting player. He likes scoring goals, and on the West Coast, that's what he did, and he did it very well. And, you know, Martin's system doesn't exactly open it up for him at any point.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That could certainly have a lot to do with it. It's certainly frustrated very talented offensive players in the past.
Take us home.
Number 10. How many points are the Habs going to earn on this 3-game West Coast swing?
They better get
Anaheim
3
tomorrow night, Thursday night, San Jose, Saturday afternoon. How many are they going to?
They're going to get 2.
Fair enough. Yeah, it's, it's tough. It's really tough to forecast these West Coast games.
Yeah.
Teams that you never really see, but at least based on the standings, Anaheim's really struggling. San Jose is red hot, and LA has been a bit of a disappointment this year, but they're a decent team.
Yeah.
You know, 2 straight losses for the Habs, albeit 1 in overtime. I think they'll get 3.
I hope they get 3.
I hope so too. I think Anaheim's really sort of spiraling downwards. I think they get a win tomorrow night, and then I could see them getting a point.
Yeah, you gotta hope they get 2 tomorrow. I mean, just the fact that Markov's likely going to be back in the lineup on Wednesday, come on, that's got to give him a boost. I mean, this is a team that's essentially, much like its fans, been waiting for Markov to return for a long, long time now. So, you know, I gotta hope at least against a team that is playing as poorly as Anaheim is, and with Markov back, that thing's got to add up for at least 2 points there. Elsewhere, I want them to... I'd be happy with 4, obviously. I think that's the general consensus. I'll even be okay if they come back with 3 points, but I expect only 2 for some reason. I don't feel good right now about this team, despite the fact that Markov's back.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot to feel great about. The last little stretch has been really mediocre. We'll see. Maybe they start to turn things around. Maybe, you know, sometimes a road trip is what you need, actually. As counterintuitive as that sounds, but... we'll see. It's not an easy stretch by any, you know, by any stretch.
Not an easy stretch by any stretch.
I know. I paused there trying to think of another word, but I'm not that articulate.
Well, at least we got this to look forward to. It's my Louis theme song.
I like it.
Yeah, are we going to see LeBlanc beyond the 3 games at any point this year?
I think so. If they've already gone ahead and taken the plunge and made the call up, I mean, obviously someone's going to get hurt or suspended or scratched between now and the end of the season, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's the next guy up when something like that happens.
If he's our forward going forward?
I kind of get that feeling.
I'm fine with that. I can deal
with
that.
I'm fine with that as well.
You know, that's how you get these guys into the league, that, you know, play here and there, and at least that's how Montreal seems to get these guys into the league. But like I say, I just don't want to see them playing on the 4th line. That's just a waste, and it gives us no proper gauge of what he's capable of.
No, and it would be a very Jacques Martin thing to do to bury a guy like that on the 4th line until he's quote-unquote proven himself. But yeah, I get the sense he's the next guy in going forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we'll see. But there's an interesting story today, actually, is that I believe I'm correct in saying this, is that Montreal is the only team in the NHL that hasn't had a player from the 2008, 9, 10, or 11 drafts make an appearance in the NHL yet.
Really?
Really, that streak will come to an end, obviously, once Lemieux steps onto the ice. But you think of Montreal, and you think of a, not a young team, but you think of guys like Subban and Eller and, you know, Pesciola lately. It's a, there's some young talent there, but they've been really slow to bring up their guys from the last couple of drafts, and LeBlanc seems to be the only one who's really on the precipice.
Yeah. But they have they been slow because they felt they rushed it too much in the past?
I think that's probably one thing. It's also just, I think, reflects the outlook of the organization. It's a very sort of conservative, cautious approach that they're taking with everything.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that goes back to not rushing players up.
I'm okay with it. I mean, I you know, obviously I think Carey Price was a player who was brought up much, much too fast. You know, you could even argue that Eller came into the league a little bit too quickly, but they, you know, they had to play him, as we've said before, because of Halak. So, you know, what you going to do there? Let's shift back to what not
just... And it's
just,
not like they have any can't-miss prospects. In the, you know,
oh, yeah, no, for sure.
You're not sitting on Taylor Hall here. You got some guys who I think are going to be good pros in the future, but... You know, a guy like Tenorti, he'll benefit from a season or two, you know, below in the NHL. You don't need to rush these guys out.
What do you expect career-wise from LeBlanc?
Nothing short of the second coming of Guy Lafleur.
Nothing short.
Nothing short. Anything below that, I'll consider him a colossal failure. What do I expect? You know, when, interestingly enough, when Montreal drafted him, I thought, oh, God, here's another case of a Montreal reaching to get a Quebecer.
Yep.
I didn't think he was whatever he was, a 15th pick overall or something. I didn't think he was that talented, but he's been really good in the queue. He was really good at Harvard, and he looked really, really good for Team Canada. So I've become sold since the pick. You know, do I think he's a future all-star even? Maybe not, but I think if he can turn into a good top six forward, a 65-point-a-year type guy, I think that's a nice piece to add.
Oh, yeah. Because those guys, I mean, those guys are the ones that you'll certainly overpay for, I find, when it comes to trying to add a piece. And when you can build them in-house, if you can build anybody top six in-house, that's a huge benefit for a team. So if he turns out to be a top six forward for the Habs, you know, to skate along with Pacioretty and, you know, some of the older guys even, and fit those pieces together, I'm completely content with that. I wouldn't mind seeing, you know, top six. Like you say, I'm not going to get... I know some people seem to have very, very high hopes that he's going to be an all-star, perennial all-star, and I don't... You know, he may never make a single all-star game, but as long as he can contribute year in, year out, as you say, the 60-point range, I think from a 15th overall pick, yeah, some go much better, but I think you can be happy with that.
Yeah, he looked really good for Team Canada.
Yeah, he did. No, I mean...
I mean, so did Kyle Chichura, so it's not necessarily means everything, but he looked really good in the juniors. He's leading the Bulldogs in scoring. You know, he's shown the potential, certainly.
What about Brendan Gallagher?
Yeah, they said he's sort of the next, if not LeBlanc, he's the next guy in the pipeline. He's the only other guy who might be ready to step in.
Well, there was some arguing that he should have made the team coming out of the gate this season, which, I mean, that's simply not the case, obviously. At least give him some time to season. I don't know about this guy either. I mean, I don't follow the minor league teams that closely. I'm you know, some of these guys don't come onto my radar until they actually don the Bleu Blanc Rouge. But Gallagher is actually one of these guys that I've heard very good things about, and he seems kind of like a decent fit. So, you know, if both of those somehow could end up being top six guys, that's what can, you know, propel your organization forward, is finding kind of those types of players in out of drafts.
Yeah, I'm like you. I'd be lying if I could sit here and break down Gallagher's game and tell you I watch all the Bulldog games, but I've heard good things. Like you said, he looked really good in training camp, and he's might be the next guy in after LeBlanc. And if LeBlanc looks really out of his element on these next three games,
he might be
possible
the next,
that Gallagher's the next call-up.
Well, we'll get to see some him over the Christmas break, because I'm pretty sure he's going to make Team Canada, at least Gallagher.
I would think so, yeah. I would certainly think so.
That's the first I saw P.K. Subban was in those junior games, and that's when I started getting excited about P.K.
Yeah, me too.
I mean,
he was great.
He's not having a great season right now, though. But are are people acting like he's having a much worse season than he is? Because that's what I feel is happening. I don't think he's a disaster out there.
I don't think he is either. I mean, people are and maybe I'll put myself in this category as well. You know, people are expecting this huge Munster breakout, borderline Norris Trophy season, which is a lot of pressure to put on a guy who's essentially in his second year. You know, third year, I guess.
No, it's second year. I mean, he only showed up for a couple of playoff rounds the season before.
Yeah, so it really is second year. And you know, I don't think he's been great. No one can make that argument, but give the guy time. He's young. There are going to be some growing pains, and I really don't think he's been that bad.
No. And like you say, like, year two, arguably, I mean, the sophomore slump is not just a figment of people's imagination. It exists. The second season in the NHL seems to be, for some reason, the hardest season to have any success in one's career, unless you're Scott Gomez. I'm really getting confused when people suggest that perhaps some people are suggesting the biggest problem with the Habs right now is PK Subban, and I don't see that being the case. There's things about his game that I don't love right now, but at the same time, I'm not panicked or, you know, like some idiots out there suggesting we trade him.
Well, that's just insane.
Yeah, we went to that on the forum, but what the... This is François Gagnon was one of the people I heard talking about this as if it was a legitimate good idea. Like, somewhere out there, it's a good idea. I'm sure he wouldn't mind seeing us move him for Bobby Ryan.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, Bobby Ryan's one thing because he's at least an all-star caliber player.
Yeah, but I still don't want to move Subban for Ryan.
Oh, neither do I.
I guarantee you that's a bad deal.
Oh, yeah, it's insane. I mean, it's not going to happen. Let's get that out of the way. Pierre Gauthier's not that stupid.
No, he's not.
But, you know, the fact that people are talking about it is just insane, and it's, you know, the type of crap that happens in Montreal and not that many other markets, where if a guy doesn't deliver on expectations immediately, we rip him apart. These moronic trade rumors start floating, and it drives me insane. I think it's extremely counterproductive. I think it's one of the things that works against the Habs in terms of building a successful franchise going forward. And like I said, it's not going to happen, but even the fact that people are talking about it and there's that chatter out there and there's this pressure from the fans and the media is just insane.
Speaking of that chatter out there, the main thing everyone's talking about, Patches, Letang, we got into it a little bit in the opening 20, but let's get back to it right now. Brendan Shanahan is not only in Montreal, but especially in Montreal, he's going to be under a microscope now. I mean, I know I wasn't paying that close attention to how he was kind of handing out suspensions, and I wasn't watching his video breakdown of what Mayer did what, but I know now, after this Pacioretty hit and the three games he got, I'm going to be watching very, very closely.
Yeah, like I said, I thought it was a bit much. It's a really tough job. I understand that. Like I said, I don't think it was this anti-Habs thing or a pro-Pittsburgh thing. I think...
No, it's not.
It's a tough job. Every hit is different, but you do have to work on precedent to a certain extent, and I think it's just, like I said earlier, the lack of consistency that drives fans insane.
I mean, I know they're not comparable hits, and Boston fans think it's ludicrous that we compare them, but for Lucic to get nothing, and then Pacioretty to get three games, I don't follow that.
No, neither do I, especially, you know, a guy like Lucic has got a bit of a reputation for being a borderline player, and I do think reputation has to play a role.
But that's
the problem. If you go on that, Pacioretty, he's a physical player, but he's by no means a dirty player.
He was involved in one of the most disgusting hits I've ever seen, Sean.
He was. That is true. We're going to hold that against him.
We should hold that against him. But like you say, it's what is annoying, I guess, in this scenario for me as a Montreal fan, is now Pacioretty, should something like this occur again, he's considered a repeat offender. Milan Lucic is not. That I also see why that confuses me that won't come into play.
Yeah, I really think Shanny dropped the ball on that. I thought, like I said, I thought it was a bang-bang play. Obviously, it was borderline, but I don't even know if we're having this discussion if Letang doesn't break his nose and there's blood all over the ice.
Yeah, if Letang gets back up, we don't have this discussion. I'm convinced of that.
It was a spectacular hit, you know, and everyone's looking at the after effects of the hit, but the hit itself, yeah, it was borderline, but it wasn't this blatant headhunting you know, hit. And I really think three games is a stretch. But like you said, if this sets a precedent and these type of hits deserve three-game suspensions from this point going forward, fine, I guess. But if this is just sort of Shanahan throwing darts and coming up with three games, then I have a real problem with that.
Yeah, it's going to be going forward. We're going to find out kind of how we assess this thing, I think. Now, this whole, at least my Twitter feed, nearly blew up with this whole thing. And one thing I'm looking at this and I was thinking about is that the biggest problem with Twitter and Facebook and everything else is we didn't used to be so surrounded by not only our lunatic fringe, but the lunatic fringe of other teams. And then what happens is these lunatics, who are far from the most reasonable of hockey fans, start going at each other. It takes up your whole Twitter feed, and some of these things end up seeming like much bigger controversies with much wider breadth of opinion on them than there actually is. I think most people out there are probably in the center with us. We're saying, okay, three games, it seems a bit much, maybe a game too much, but, you know, if that's going to be how it's going to be going forward. But then you go on Twitter, and these fans, you get guys in Boston who, for some reason, think Pacioretty should have got 50 games, and you got people in Montreal who are convinced that, you know, Pacioretty, because he said he's sorry afterwards, and because, you know, because he'd been involved in the Chara hit, somehow that, you know, there shouldn't be anything because Lucic found it funny when he hit Miller, and Pacioretty clearly is a nicer guy because he went and said sorry to Letang after. I think it's great, and I think it's, you know, shows that Max Pacioretty's a good guy and a classy guy and the kind of guy I want on the Canadiens, but at the same time, the fact that he said he's sorry, I mean, we're not in kindergarten here. Who cares if he said he's sorry beyond respect? I mean, this shouldn't play anything to do into Shanahan's decision whether Max Pacioretty goes over and says, yeah, sorry, I nearly broke your face, or did break your face.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot of room for nuance in 140 characters. You know, I like Twitter. It's fun. It does add to the experience to a certain extent, but you're right. What you get are these sort of just random opinions thrown at the wall, and you know, it's done in a semi-anonymous fashion as yeah. well, which doesn't help matters. So you do have to kind of block all that noise out. It's fun. It gives fans an opportunity to vent and to express their opinions, I suppose. But and there's a lot of good stuff on there. But
oh, yeah, there is. There's great stuff on there.
Grains of salt,
we're on there.
Exactly.
You can follow at the Montreal Bias, at the O'Neill Factor, and at Habs Dispatches.
Exactly. No, it's fun, and I think it's been good for hockey, for pro sports in general. But you know, when people have only 140 characters to express their outrage, and they can do it, like I said, sort of somewhat anonymously, it's usually a recipe for disaster.
Sticking with the Twitter and the Pacioretty hit, which suddenly has new meaning. Wow. It seemed Pittsburgh fans, from what I could tell, were very uninvolved in this whole thing. This amped up the Boston-Montreal rivalry once more somehow. I noticed more Boston fans with opinions than any other team besides, obviously, Habs fans.
Yeah, that's just, and now I'm going to show my bias, but that's just obnoxious Bruins fans being obnoxious Bruins fans who feel the need to chip in on this because, yeah. you know, Pacioretty's somehow the bad guy because he, you know, dared to break his neck when he got his head rammed.
I'll never understand that. How they, like, I'm fine with them arguing that it was a clean hockey play. I disagree with it. We've gone over that many, many times before. But the fact that Pacioretty came out of that, at least in Bruins fans' eyes, as some sort of bad guy. I mean, you could be pissed at the fans on obviously the 911 calls. I mean, everyone thinks it's stupid beyond belief, except for however many people did it. I don't know. And, you know, there's plenty of dumb stuff on Montreal's side that could annoy Bruins fans, but Max Pacioretty did nothing wrong at any point besides nearly get his head taken off. I don't know where he became the villain.
Neither do I, but he is, for some reason, he's the villain in Bruins fans' eyes, and like you said, this hit on Letang just underscored that. Is that, you know, Bruins message boards and Bruins Twitter feeds just exploded on this. It was really bizarre.
They're watching us.
They are, but I don't know if I can't remember many incidents where, you know, two teams are playing and it infuriates this third party so much.
More so than the party that got hit. I mean, really, if any fan base should have been pissed about the whole moment, it was the guy, I mean, they won the game and Letang is the guy who scored the game winner in a very acceptable fashion. But, you know, I didn't hear boo out of Pittsburgh's fan, which is why I was a little disappointed that we're not going to get to speak to a Pittsburgh blogger, because they were just seemed like, yeah, well, our guy got back up, he won the game, you know, give patches, whatever. They didn't care.
Yeah, exactly, which I think almost underscores our point. You know, it was a borderline hit, but it wasn't a dirty, malicious hit.
No, exactly.
And I don't think Pittsburgh fans took it that way. They said, okay, it was, you know, a borderline hit. There was, you know, broke Letang's nose, and maybe it's a suspendable offense, but they weren't up in arms about it.
No, they weren't at all. Only Bruins fans seemed to, and the Montreal fans once the suspension came out, which I'd say, come on, guys, 3 games we can live with it, provided going forward, it's, you know, everyone kind of gets the same treatment. All right, do you need a little rest because you're sick?
I am pretty winded.
Go have a little chicken soup.
That sounds delightful.
All right, I'll talk to our girl Steph Darwish, who broke big just after appearing on this podcast. CJAD put her on.
Really?
Yeah, we're kingmakers.
Excellent! Congratulations.
Yeah, so that's how that. So we're gonna check in with her, and then we'll do our three stars. We'll take a look at the schedule ahead, California, which we've kind of already discussed. And then that'll be it. Yet another podcast, and we can finally watch some hockey on Wednesday. With everything that's gone on, I just want to watch a game.
Yeah, it's those 10:30 starts are tough, but yeah, I'm with you. It'll be nice to watch a game finally, yeah. At least the first two periods.
All right, so this is Steph Darwish. So here we are. We've brought you back, Steph Darwish. You're going to be a regular now.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Well, excited. This is small potatoes for you now, is it not?
Actually, you know what? The CGAD thing is now a regular Monday 2:30 to 2:45 spot.
Every Monday?
Every Monday,
that's
I know.
Amazing.
I know, it's pretty funny. I enjoy it, though.
Well, tell the people, I guess. Explain what happened. Explain to me what happened. I'm going to assume they heard you on the podcast and immediately offered you a spot on radio.
It must have been that, but it also may have been that my company, we do a radio show, a business show every Monday night on CGAD, and one of our hosts is also the daytime producer, and he knows I love hockey. So it may have also been that.
Okay, maybe.
Maybe, it could be either one.
It's a toss-up, it's a tough call.
So, yeah, it is.
So the people can hear you, at least people in the Montreal area, can hear you on CJD every week now.
Yeah, CJD, 2:30 to 2:45 on Mondays.
Talking hockey.
Yeah.
Does that segment have a name yet?
No, I think, because it's another girl that I'm on with, woman, I guess I should say. So I think it's Ladies Who Love Hockey, which kind of is named my blog, too, so I'm...
Is that good or bad?
We'll see.
Kind of stepping on your toes. And what about this? We need a name for your segment on the 2-4 now.
Oh, yeah, we do, eh?
We're going to have to brainstorm on that one. We're going to have to get you a theme song and everything.
I'd love a theme song.
Oh, we'll get you a theme song, no doubt about that. If there's one thing, in the years I've been doing radio and now podcasts, if there's one thing I love putting together, it's a theme song. So we'll get that.
Oh, yeah?
That I'm excited to put together.
Good.
All right, so we've got that out of the way. You're big time. You're on real radio now. But you're going to still come back and slum it. But also, in your other big time, you were down in Florida for the past week. I know that much.
Yes.
And so you were chumming it up with former Habs. That's what you do?
You know how it is. Well, you know what? I was so lame because I'm in my 30s, or early 30s, I'm 21. I was with my dad on a vacation with him. He has a condo down there, and he golfs, and the house is on a golf course. I guess you could say.
Yeah, my grandparents do the same.
Yeah, see, grandparents, exactly. So I'm living the life of the elderly. It was a retirement lifestyle, but I really liked it. And Sunday, we played a little family golf, and we come back in time for the clubhouse's Sunday brunch. Now, it's such a snobby story that I'm actually embarrassed to tell it.
That's why I want you to tell
Sunday
it.
Sunday brunch at the club.
Right,
and
as you do.
This on, my dad goes, oh, hey, Vinny. I turned around, and it was Vincent Danfous. I turned back to my dad, and my face just dropped. And he came over to the table because he knows my dad, and he was staying with some friends of my son. I had no idea my dad knew hockey players, by the way. And
There's a whole different life down in Florida.
I guess, eh?
You don't know the condo life.
On break from RDS, I guess, he said.
And so you hung out? You're best buds now?
I hope he remembers my name. I didn't. You know what? I get shy, actually.
Yeah.
So I didn't. I don't even know if I said much.
So you didn't really fan out?
No. I mean, I was eating. I was kind of in shock because I wasn't expecting Vincent D'Anfous to interrupt my brunch. But it was cool. It was cool.
Well, that was your. I mean, that was your. We were talking last time you were on. That was kind of your era as when you were young. That Vinny would have been the captain, right?
Yeah, he totally would have.
Yeah, same here.
Like, I have very fond memories of Vincent D'Anfous. But, I don't know, it's funny because to me, he's so much older now. He must be in his 40s.
Yeah.
But to me, he, like, when I see him, it's like he's 20 years old. So it's funny to see him as a grown-up, I guess you could say.
Yeah, he's all grows up now. But, I mean, you see him on RDS.
He's a big boy now.
Exactly. So here's what since we've last spoke to you, you're hanging out, you're hobnobbing in Florida with former Habs, and you've got your own segment talking Habs on CJD.
I know, what a Habs week I had. We're not even really catching many games.
But did you know what happened at least?
Yes, I know what happened. I didn't get any of the games down there. I don't have a package, I guess you could say, but okay. I got highlights, a lot of highlights. And I guess what would be the biggest thing would be the Pacioretty.
Yeah, let's start with the big issue. Where you stand?
Okay, well, I mean, I knew there would be a suspension because that's the way it is now. And I was happy that there would be a suspension, but I was totally shocked by three games. Totally. I thought it would be one game because you need to give a suspension.
Yeah. I thought, I wrote it on the forum, one or two, and then I talked about it on this podcast earlier. Three, like I said, and I'm fine with it. It was more than I expected, but I just want Shanahan to use this now as kind of the precedent, and we can negotiate from there.
But how can he? It's such a strict precedent. That's the thing. So
yeah.
Three games for... It was obviously... It wasn't intentional. There was no way that could be interpreted as intentional.
No.
It did hit his head, so that's why the one game. But three seems something like... If he was a repeat offender, we'd have gotten eight games?
You've got to assume, yeah. I mean, if he does it twice, that's eight games at that point. So let's say Matt Cook does it now. Well, you know, he's got to be at what, 10 or 12 games for something similar?
That's so true. Imagine, I would say even he'd have to be like 15 games.
Yeah, for sure. Or even, okay, say Pacioretty does it again. We're at 5 or 6 at this point. So, I mean, there's a lot of games, which if they want to get rid of headshots, fine. But like you say, it's a lot of games. And I just wonder if Shanahan's going to, you know, What if three's kind of the max that he gives for a headshot? And then I'm going to be pissed off because what Pacioretty did wasn't the worst kind of headshot you can do by any stretch. I mean, it was an unlucky, unintentional headshot.
Exactly. Which is why the one game would have been the statement, you can't hit a head, even if it's accidental, he's going to miss a game. A three game, I don't know. And then I heard that apparently when Shanahan was talking to Pacioretty on the phone, he compared it to Matt Cook and Savard.
Yeah, I know. That's which, I think, the point that a lot of people are absolutely outraged by.
Yeah, because, I mean, they were very clearly different hits.
Yeah, and obviously. And, I mean, even the results were different from the two. One was, we're called the Montreal Bias, and so we will come at it from the Montreal angle, but one was clearly intentional and, you know, probably ruined a guy's career. And the other was accidental, and the guy scored the game-winning goal. You know what I mean? How are those comparable?
But apparently, I mean, I didn't check online, but he's out. Are they playing tonight, Pittsburgh?
Yeah, I believe last I saw, he was questionable for the game tonight, so.
So, I mean, I guess maybe there's some lingering. But either way, three games. I think everyone agrees that's a little bit too much.
Man, the general, I mean, there's not an analyst or expert I heard, at least outside of the greater Boston area, who suggested anything more than two games, so.
Yeah, no, I've heard the same.
All right, so that's the big issue. We've got that off our chest. Now let's move into the fact that it wasn't a very good week for the Habs. You didn't miss anything spectacular, I'll tell you that much.
I have something to tell you. I was at the Monday Boston game, and
you had amazing seats for that.
Yeah, that was it was. And you know what? Actually, I don't. I'm bragging that I met this on Melfus. I'm going to brag again. I had first row seats.
Yeah, you. I saw you tweeted them.
Yeah, they I've never impressive. Had that in my life. Someone switched with me. I didn't have first receipts when I was going into the game.
Okay.
And so it was a switch in my favor. And we lost that game, yeah. Obviously, but it was a good game.
What's it like watching? I've been in the press box, and that's in its own experience, but I've never been right beside the game. What's it like from that close?
I was where Hap shoot twice inside the blue line.
Mm-hmm.
So on my side, down the ice, I'm totally blind. But you see the breakout and you see the plays in the zone, mm-hmm. like you've never seen before. So it makes it worth it.
Well, I can imagine. I mean, I've even seen the difference. Usually when I go to a game, usually there's nothing behind me but wall, in fact, the majority of the times. And that's not me, like, trying to be funny. That's literally the scenario, is it's wall behind me, which I'm fine with. I just like being in the Bell Center. But
yeah, exactly.
A few times I've got down, at least on... I was in even the red section. I got that as a Christmas gift in an afternoon game against Atlanta last year. And when you get that close, it's a completely different game. You realize the size, the speed, and even just the flow of the game seems different than ever watching it on TV or even from the cheap seats like they exist.
No, exactly. And you know what? It is the speed. And at one point, Emelin stopped right inside the blue line, and the force in which he stops and starts, I've never seen anything like that in my life. Like, there's snow that's sprayed on the entire glass, and you really, really appreciate how quickly they start and go. Because I play hockey recreationally, and it's not like, you know, when you're playing, you feel like you're really good.
Yeah.
It really.
Well, no, not me. I've never felt like that at all. It's never
you're
been a moment.
You're like, I can play this game, and then you see it up close in an NHL game, and it's crazy how fast. And they're so big.
So you were there the night of the fight.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
The ridiculously violent fight.
From me.
So, any details?
I don't know what happened. I just saw a lot of punching, then a lot of security. I don't know. Did anybody ever find out what happened?
I haven't heard anything further. I'm sure someone out there figured out something to some degree. I don't know where the guy... I mean, they're good seats. I assume they're probably all Montreal fans, so I don't know that it was necessarily a skirmish between fan bases. Well, skirmish. Not a skirmish at all. It was a violent, violent fight.
It was a huge fight. Like, I've never seen a fight like that.
Oh, I mean, and there were two guys just going off on this one guy, kicking him and booting him. Like, it was disturbing. No, I'd never seen...
I have no idea what could have provoked that. Like, that's an intense... And then, did you see the security had a lot of trouble taking...
Oh, yeah.
...the shirtless tattoo man out?
I know, it was definitely... And I mean, watching on TV, because I wasn't right beside the game that night. I had to watch on TV. because there was a timeout when it happened, and the players were all very distracted by it as well. I mean, that's what made everybody kind of watching at home, because obviously they weren't going to show it. But everyone watching at home knew something significant had happened, because it was a key moment in the game, and the players just seemed very distracted by it. Boston more so, and Scott Gomez... So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. All right, the other big thing is Andre might be back tomorrow, or at least Thursday, it seems.
Markov, yeah.
Yeah.
Markov, yeah, but then I heard, see, it's like, cool, that Jacques Martin said it's a possible, I don't know, he's so
no,
like, it was
Jacques
like a
Martin,
double negative.
Yeah, he worded it, something about it not...
Not
being a
possibility.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, what do you mean you can't rule out the possibility? Either it's a... like, it's clearly a possibility... Can you rule it out?
No,
the definite?
I have no idea. So is he coming back?
Oh, Jacques Martin. He'll have to He'll have to take note not to use the confusing double negatives in the future. So you think he'll make a difference whenever he comes back?
I don't know. I haven't seen him in like 5 years.
See, I know, eh? Who is this now we're discussing?
But remember the first time he came back from injury? I think he came back with 2 goals or something.
Yeah, he did. But then, you know, four days later, nothing.
Yeah, so maybe, I don't know, he must be so ready to play.
Oh my God, I can't even imagine.
It's been 2.5 years, more or less, yeah?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, he got a little bit of a few games in here and there, but yeah, it's pretty much been 2 straight years he hasn't played.
Poor guy. So yeah, I think he's going to have a good game just because, you know,
where do you
he wants it.
Where do you expect him to be? Into, like, in a percentage of the old Andrei Markov, the amazing Andrei Markov that we had?
Oh, that's a hard question, just because I think it has a lot to do with his knees, and I don't know much about knee surgery. I'd like to think that he'll, because he's also aged a bit too, I guess.
Yeah, you've got to factor that in. Years.
I don't know, maybe let's say 85.
See, I said I'll be happy if he's 75-80%.
Yeah, because that's still pretty good.
I mean, he was a great
defenseman.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he'll make a difference. If he is 75-80%, then he will make a significant difference in that team.
Yeah, I agree.
And last week I talked my...
Sit.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to ask you who's going to sit if he's back.
It's going to be Diaz.
Yeah, okay, good. I agree with that.
I'm fine with, and, you know, I like Diaz, I liked what he was doing, but going back to the AHL won't be a bad thing for him either. He's young. No one expected him even to be on this team this year. And I don't want to say he's regressed, but it seems a little bit like maybe he, whatever that, you know, kind of first burst of excitement in the NHL that he had going coming out of training camp and even the first few weeks of the season, I think he's kind of fallen off and he's back to the level expected, which is, you know, more of an AHL player. But we've got a bunch of those guys right now because half the team is still hurt. So at least half the blue line is still hurt.
Anyway, I agree with that. I think he's regressed a bit too.
All right, and Sean and I discussed this, and now I'll ask you, what do you expect from California? We got three games. We got no Pacioretty. What would you consider a successful road trip?
A successful road trip would be... two of three.
Yeah.
But I fear... Okay, so Anaheim's up tomorrow.
Anaheim.
And Anaheim's been doing terrible. And I feel that Montreal's a good comeback team.
Yeah.
Usually on the other end of someone else's struggle.
That's true.
And then we have San Jose. I think we play pretty well against San Jose.
We always seem to match up against your West Coast team.
Yeah, you remember. They are my West Coast team. So I struggle in those games. But I think Habs do pretty well against San Jose. And then LA, you know what? They might do well, too, because it's another fast team. They do well against fast teams.
That one's in the mid-afternoon, 3 in the afternoon.
I know.
So 12:30 LA time or whatever.
I really, really don't like afternoon games.
I suppose you maybe... Well, no, you didn't, because you didn't get to see, but it... the big piss-off from the past week was the Friday game against Philly was at 3 in the afternoon while everybody in Canada is still at work.
I know, that's strange. I don't know why I see why they put an afternoon Thanksgiving game, but why the Canadian team?
Yeah, why involve a team from Canada? It doesn't, you know. It
didn't
make
sense. That was really weird. I didn't realize it until Friday, because I was looking at my, you know, you look at your fantasy hockey scores, and I noticed that the game had already been played, and I was really shocked, because it was a Friday.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
Do people miss work? Do you miss work to go watch it?
No, I PVR'd it is what I did, which was a waste of my time because the game was awful. I mean, if Carey hadn't been good in that one, it would have been 6-1, 7-1.
Oof.
Yeah, no, it was bad. They were outplayed terribly in that one. It was very ugly. So it was no big deal that nobody actually got to see it. All right, and now Kirk Muller's the head coach in Carolina. What do you think of Captain Kirk down there with the Canes?
You have to be happy for him, right?
Yeah.
So I'm very happy for him.
He was never going to get the job in Montreal.
Pardon?
He was never going to get the job in Montreal.
No, he's never going to get the job in Montreal. And I said this on my other CJAD show the other day, or Monday, I should say, that I think, even though it was the greatest spring of my life in a long time, we went to the Eastern Conference Finals a couple of years ago, it's probably the worst thing that could happen to us, because it elevated Jacques Martin to an untouchable status, and we lost both Boucher and Muller now because of it.
It's true. No, you're right. I mean,
it is true. It's sad, though, because it was a great spring.
Oh, no, it was a lot of fun, and I mean, you know, for people like us who, 93 is a very long time ago, and we weren't really celebrating it in the way we'd probably celebrate it now, it was nice to get a run like that.
It started off the summer really nicely. I love the city when there's action like that happening.
So fantastic when they go on that run. No, I remember
it is,
I was driving.
I think it ruined, and now we have Jacques Martin forever.
No. If we miss the playoffs this year, Jacques Martin is done. And even if we make it and don't get to the next round, his job will be in question. But if we fail to make the playoffs, he's done.
Oh, you think? I hope so.
I know. I definitely think that's the case. So now, what are you rooting for us to miss the playoffs?
No. See, that's the thing.
I know.
I can't do that.
It's that middling thing that got you heavily depressed last time we spoke.
Yeah, it's true. No, see, that's the thing. I'm going to root for them to make the playoffs and
lose in the first or second.
They'll probably get an extension.
Yeah, exactly. Give them a nice fight. Although an extension doesn't mean much, because Carboneau got his extension and was fired soon after. So,
but you still collect your salary, don't you?
Oh yeah, you still get paid. But I don't care what the Molsons spend their money on.
Me neither. But I'm thinking that's probably the greatest job ever is to.
Oh,
get
yeah.
the extension, get fired, and just live life for free.
Bruce Boudreaux, right now. Bruce Boudreaux, he's got, he's got at least all of Christmas season off. You just spend some time with the family, eat a couple
True.
Turkeys, and, you know.
I feel sad for Bruce Boudreaux.
So, yeah, but someone's going to hire him.
Yeah, I hope so. Just because I feel like I got to know him last year in the 24/7. I really liked him as a person.
Same here. I like both those head coaches.
Yeah, me too. They're nice guys. Good guys.
I don't know how I feel about Tortorella.
No, me neither, but it'll be interesting.
It'll be very funny. Avery, Tortorella. There's a lot of characters coming up on this one.
I know. Avery, Pronger.
Yep. Although Pronger's out for a month, so.
Yeah, but he'll still be there. Yeah. I hope.
No, we'll see.
Like,
we'll see.
In the locker room. And...
Yeah, we'll get images of Pronger as well. I love that
and
show.
Plus, they started filming in September, I believe.
You're right. Exactly. You're right. Good call.
So he'll be. I watched the preview. That's the only reason why I know that.
So you're anticipating it to that degree? You're checking out the trailer and all?
Yeah, I really, really like 24/7.
Oh no, it's amazing!
I already have it on my calendar.
I know it was spectacular, and I can't wait for another one. It gives you a whole new appreciation for the game, for the players you like, the players you dislike. I think even the players on Yeah, Montreal's not in it, but it changes the way I even looked at the Habs last season. Because, I don't know, it takes you
because
behind
you get
the spectacle.
Inside, like, what goes on, yeah. On the ice, too, especially in the scrums. I like that when they had the audio on for that.
And you realize, I think, we have a tendency to maybe, when bad stretches happen to the Habs, and it looks like things are lackluster out there, I think we really believe at times that they don't care. And you watch 24/7, sure, there's probably some guys who care more than others, but it's hard to say that there are very many of these guys that aren't trying, and trying with everything they can,
Yeah, I agree with you. It's true, it did give you that perspective.
So when you got it, sir, it's on your calendar, when does that series come back?
December 14th it starts.
Well, a couple weeks then.
I know, a couple weeks, I think 10 p.m., I think. I didn't mark that part down.
If you didn't watch it last time and you're listening to this podcast because you love hockey, it's must watch, even for non-hockey fans. I think it's a super interesting behind-the-scenes look
at
the
NHL. There's good character development.
Oh, it's fantastic. It was so well done. All right, well, I'm not going to tie up any more of your time. I know you've got other radio shows and other Habs to hang out with, trips to Florida, and... You're living the big life. I know, it's tough for you. I understand. One time on this podcast, and it all adds up for you.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. But we can next week. Are you going to come back?
Yeah, I'd love to.
All right, we'll have you back. And we'll come back. We're going to come up with a name for your segment, and we'll come up with a theme song for your segment.
Oh, that's so awesome.
And a million places you can find her, obviously, on the MontrealBias.com is one of our contributors. Your own site, LadyLovesHockey.com. And now, on CJD, Monday afternoon, what time?
2:30.
2:30 till 2:45? Something
that's
like
right.
that? All right. So listen to that. You're all over the place.
No.
All right.
Thanks again.
All right, thanks for doing this, Steph.
Bye.
Have a good one. There you go, that was it, Steph Darwish. Sounded great.
Our very own.
Very own.
So, we've already discussed it, so we won't go over it in great detail, but taking a look at the schedule very quickly. Obviously, the Habs out west for three-game swing. They've got Saku and the Ducks tomorrow night, or tonight, depending when you listen to this. Wednesday night, they're at Anaheim. Thursday night, at San Jose. Saturday afternoon... they're at the Forum or the Staples Center, I guess it is, to take on the Kings.
I hate afternoon games.
I do too. They're so I really hate them in Montreal because the crowd is just dead.
Yeah, everyone brings. I mean, I know you need your family game, and I do appreciate that Montreal generally puts it against New Jersey, which thanks for that. But they're just it's awful. All these kids are there, not even watching half the game, looking for Yuppie. I know I was that kid at Montreal Expos games, but I actually followed the games, so I have an unfair dislike of children at sports games because I can't yell whatever I want because there's families around and they give me looks and I'm like, what are you talking about? You're the one that brought your kid here.
Agreed, and I'm not quite sure what the L.A. afternoon crowd is like, but I can't imagine that it's a rabid, so that'll be...
Jesus, they won't even show up until the second period, so...
I mean, that's 3:30.
Yeah.
3:30 Eastern time, so that's 12:30 L.A. time.
No one will be
but,
there.
But that's what we've got for the week coming up, and we'll discuss the week after that in more depth on the next episode of the 2-4, but just looking a bit, little bit further, not a back-breaking schedule after that. We've got Columbus coming into town. Yeah, then the Canucks are in town. They're hot, but they've been inconsistent. Then we're at New Jersey, followed by a visit from the Islanders. So a little bit of a soft spot on the schedule.
You know what probably happens? We probably get like 4 or 5 points in California, which should be kind of tougher, and come back and then just shit the bed against those terrible teams that we should be getting points. And I just feel like this team... really, they play well against good teams. They play poor against bad teams. I can't figure them out.
No, it's been really a really frustrating season so far, and it's really been, you know, 2 steps forward, 1 step back. Every time you think they're sort of going to go on a bit of a roll, they drop a game they shouldn't, and you know they're what, 1-2-1 over their last four. It really wasn't a good week, but albeit that was against a really tough stretch of the schedule. But, you know, before that, they were 7-2-1, so they go on a bit of a roll, and then they sort of shoot themselves in the foot.
And they still haven't got into that playoff hump.
No, and it's, you know, unless they need to show me something soon, you know.
Yep.
It's early. I don't, you know, I'm not worried about the fact that they're not in the top eight, but they need to show me something beyond this, like you said, win two, lose two, win a couple in a row, lose.
It's all fine. Marco's coming back. Stanley Cup contenders.
It's been disappointing.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, you want to look at one more game, or we want to just get into the Stars?
Where did I leave off? Left off with a visit next Tuesday from the Islanders, and if we look forward a bit past that, Philly on Thursday, and then Jersey again. Back-to-back Saturday games against the Devils.
Hmm.
At New Jersey on the 10th, and then Jersey comes into town on the 17th.
And they start gearing up for their Florida trip.
Yeah, exactly, which is a little later than usual this year.
Yeah, I noticed that. Usually happens...
Usually happens right around Christmas or before Christmas, and this year it's right before New Year's.
I can deal with it.
Yeah, that awkward Florida road trip we have every year where both arenas are... 80% Habs fans.
I usually half watch those games because I'm also watching the junior tournament anyway. So I don't know. That Florida road trip's always kind of a weird, my least Habs obsessed spot of the season. All right, who you want to go first, or do you want me to go first? You're not feeling well. I want you to get comfortable here.
Well, I appreciate it. Does that mean you go first, or I go first?
Well, I want you to choose whatever makes you feel good, buddy.
Thanks, pal. I'll go first. Why not?
All right, little chicken soup for your soul.
Third star of the week, completely unwarranted, but frankly I had a hard time coming up with three Habs who deserved accolades this week. So third star of the week is Louis LeBlanc for getting the call up.
All right.
I'm excited. I'm like I said, I'm trying to temper my expectations, but I like what I've seen out of him so far, and it'll be nice to get a 3-game cameo out of him at least. Mm-hmm. And see what we have going forward. Second star, and I feel like a broken record because I think he's been one of my stars more often than not since we started doing this, but Eric Cole, who's continues to be excellent for the Habs.
Yeah, I like that one.
Really, everything you could have asked for so far. And I thought it was a good signing, but really with every free agent signing except for the absolute can't-miss guys, you're always wondering if there's that small chance that he's a bust, because we have had some busts in the past, but... Mm-hmm. Definitely can't put him in that category. He's been absolutely everything we could have hoped for when we brought him in from Carolina. And my first star of the week, the new head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes, Kirk Muller, former Habs great, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Former Habs very good player, an assistant coach, but I like the guy. Like I said, it was only a matter of time, and not a diehard Hurricanes fan, but at least I have a quasi-rooting interest in them from now on.
I agree, and I've never even had anything that resembled a rooting interest in the Canes. And in fact, I've always strongly disliked the Canes.
Yeah, same here.
But I want Kirk to do
hard
well.
Hard to dislike. Yeah.
Yep, I agree. They're decent, very decent, sir. Number three, sort of similar to yours. You gave yours to Louis for getting the call-up. I'm giving mine to Andrei Markov for the hope alone, for the hope he's bringing to this team, and he better do something, because, like we talked about, this is our excuse. This is what we've been counting on being the difference maker, and he can be. So that's why I'm giving him number three, because he could be. Number two, there's been a lot of talk about him and the controversy with the hit and whatnot, but Patches scored again over the weekend. He's continued to just game in, game out, seems to be the guy. He hasn't missed a beat since his big injury. Keeps scoring. I really like what he's doing, so Max gets my number two. And number one, because the only reason they got a point at all against Pittsburgh, the only reason it wasn't 6-0 against Philadelphia, is Carey Price. He's looking like he's really getting his form right now, even though Montreal didn't have a great week. He made some huge saves, and especially for dropping the F-bomb. You drop an F-bomb, you get my number one star, Carey Price.
Yeah, he's been spectacular, and he wasn't bad early on, but he wasn't quite himself.
Yeah.
But he's been himself the last, whatever, month or so.
For sure. I like that guy. I like him. I like him a lot.
Yeah, he's a keeper.
Yes.
All right. He's got a future in this league.
I don't know. I think we package him and Subban and see what we can get back.
Be a hell of a bounty.
Would be. All right, let's get out of here.
All right, it was fun. So, what do you got coming up on the website?
Nah, nothing.
Before we get out of here,
nothing. Nah. I quit. Right? I don't know. Actually, I have no idea what I've got coming up. I posted earlier today, so maybe yesterday, probably by the time you're listening to this. And if you're listening to this, like 2 or 3 days from now. Come on, get on that faster. But anyways, I don't know what I got coming. Read my What the Hell Happened, find out what happened all over the internet all week, and then I'll come up with something else will get me there.
Excellent as always. I really like that.
Thanks, Sean. That's swell.
All right. Anytime, buddy.
Yeah. And as always, if anybody out there wants to email us comments, questions, you can email us themontrealbias@gmail.com. Yeah, we got a Gmail address, so you know we're established. And of course, comment on the site. We want more people to comment on the site. Even if you've heard something in this podcast you want to comment, just go into the podcast page, click on it, and you can comment below. Super easy to do. We want to hear what you've got to say out there as well, Habs Nation.
Can't say it any better than that. That'll do it.
You can't, and you won't. See you later.
Later, buddy.